Well, welcome everyone to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. And my name is Irvin Nugent, and as always, I'm joined by my friend and co-host and collaborator, Bridget Tyer. Bridget, how are you today?
Well, thank you for asking, Irvin. I am doing very well. It is a very cold winter day as we record this, but I am trying to have a more positive outlook on cold, cloudy days. So I'm bringing...
Share that with me when you find how to do that, okay?
Yes. I'm trying to look at it as an opportunity to feel cozy and, you know, enjoy the holiday season and all that comes with it. How about you? How are you?
Yeah. I have, you know... I've been feeling this cold as well, I think in a little more powerful way. So I appreciate some of the coziness as well. So yeah, cozy thoughts.
This is a juicy topic. I am really looking forward to having this conversation, Irvin. So why don't you tee it up for folks?
Sure. So today we want to talk about something that absolutely drains organizations and families for that matter. Quietly, consistently, and often invisibly. And what we are talking about is this hidden cost of avoiding conflict. And we're calling the episode today, The High Price of Silence, Why Leaders Cannot Avoid Conflict. You know, this avoidance at times is silent. It doesn't make noise. It doesn't explode, but it erodes. And it shows up in various different ways as unclear expectations, as repeated mistakes, as strained relationships, and meetings where people walk out frustrated, but importantly, say nothing. And everything is below the surface. And you know, it's interesting. I think I was just talking to you about, I was doing some research with some work I'm doing around the impact of conflict. And it is crazy, the economic impact of conflict in the workplace. And there was a survey I came across that said every week about 2.8 hours is spent dealing with unaddressed conflict. Now, that doesn't sound a lot, or it does, but when you add that up, it totals $359 billion in lost productivity. And that's just in US organizations. So let's unpack this a little bit. What I'd love to kind of talk to you about, maybe explore a little bit more, is, you know, how does avoidance impact productivity and trust? About how we tend to underestimate the cost of silence, and then what we can do about it. What are some strategies that can perhaps break this pattern that often so many of us find ourselves in? So Bridget, let's kind of start with some kind of personal reflection on the work that we do. And I'm curious, you know, do you see this pattern of conflict avoidance show up with some of your clients, with some of the leaders that you have in organizations that you've worked with?
Oh, yes. Conflict avoidance is so common. It's more like, where have I not seen it show up?
Yeah.
You know, when I think about the particulars of that, I think the first place my mind goes is peer-to-peer conflict, I think, often goes unaddressed because I don't think people know how to deal specifically with, like, a peer has, something has happened with me and a colleague that we're on, you know, we're kind of on the same level in the organization, right? Maybe we're on a team together. And, you know, there's a misunderstanding, there is a breach of trust or something. And so often we just don't say anything because we don't know what to say or how to address it. So that's where my mind went first. I certainly think conflict that we have with our boss, and that does happen, often goes unaddressed. I mean, who among us feels particularly comfortable going to the boss about a conflict?
Yeah.
It feels too risky. I think for sure leaders will often avoid conflictual conversations with direct reports that they imagine going badly.
Yeah.
And so they avoid it. So I just think it's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, what about you? What have you noticed?
Yeah. I agree with all of those. And I just maybe just add one other thing that I notice as an excuse which is really about avoiding, and that is the use of busyness. Well, I'm just too busy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and leaders are very, and it's true, we are busy, and people are trying to fit in a schedule with too many things to do. But you know, we fill our calendars, we immerse ourselves in tasks. And at times, if we're honest, some of that is so that we can avoid uncomfortable conversations.
Sure.
It's this kind of illusion that I'm so productive when really the thing that's impacting our productivity just goes untouched.
Yeah.
The problem here is, you know, that avoidance is not neutral. It actually is something that shapes the emotional climate of a team, of an organization, of a family.
Oh, wow. I love what you just said. Avoidance isn't neutral. Like we think of it as, well, first do no harm, so I just won't do anything.
Yes.
But it's not like that. It shapes the emotional climate of a team, as you just said. So important. So, Irvin, let's zoom out. You know, what actually happens to a team system when conflict goes unaddressed?
I think the first thing is something kind of we've reiterated before. You know, very often when we're talking about the emotional system of an organization, of a team, a lot is happening below the surface. And we get to see kind of above the surface, you know, some behaviors, but below there's a whole churning. And this is where anxiety breeds and anxiety lives. And so when we have avoidance, of course, it's absolutely pushing underground some of that anxiety because it's not being expressed.
Right.
And so what happens, what behaviors, it's the side conversations. It's the assumptions that we make become hardened. It's the tension increasing and the misunderstandings just begin to multiply. All of that because it's unspoken and it's just absolutely festering.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is, I think that sometimes we assume roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those roles begin to harden because conflict is avoided. So for example, I'm the avoider, or I'm the fixer. I have to rush in to fix the situation, or I'm the go-between. Mm-hmm. Come to me and I'll be the go-between. And this can go on for years. You know, we assume this role and it drains the emotional energy. You know, when you talk about, you know, I've been in coaching sessions where I think the person is a fixer, and it's like, boy, the emotional weight of that role. And they feel they have to play that role. They become so conditioned to doing that role.
Yeah.
It's terrible. And then the other thing is trust, you know, kind of good systems, good emotional systems, good teams, good organizations are built in this foundation of trust.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in the silence, one of the big impacts is trust. Trust is eroding. And it's, and you know, so often we avoid the conflict because we say, well, if I get into this, it's just, you know what's going to hit the fan, and basically trust will be destroyed. And really what's insidious is because I don't have the conflict, because I avoid it, that the trust is absolutely eroding. Because people say, well, they didn't address it. And because there's silence, that means we're accepting whatever it is. And there for a sudden, the standards and everything begins to lessen. It's like avoidance doesn't freeze a system. It actually warps it. It kind of contorts. Yeah. Does that resonate with you, Bridget?
Yeah, because really what, as you talked about it, it's kind of like we think, well, because we're not saying anything about it, it'll probably go away at some point. But actually what happens is it intensifies, you know?
Yeah.
And so underneath the surface, what we think is kind of staying maybe calm and stable is actually broiling and churning, right?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I just think the idea that, you know, that it warps things is really, that resonated with me, the warping effect of this.
Yeah. Well, we've kind of said it a little bit, but maybe you should absolutely call it out. And that would be, why do you think leaders avoid conflict? You know, we've heard, we've been witness as coaches to many leaders talking about situation they're in. And so we've heard many different reasons of why conflict might be avoided. I'm just curious, what are some that jump out at you?
Well, I mean, fear of the emotional reactions is the first thing that jumps out at me because, you know, we do have a story in our head about, well, if I bring this up, this is what's going to happen. And that's going to be bad. And the other person's going to get really angry, or they're going to cry, or they're going to turn this against me or whatever. So there's a fear there of not being able to handle the emotional reactions. Yeah. I think so often my clients don't have the right words. You know, they don't know how to say it. A big one, I think, a big reason for avoidance is just exhaustion and bandwidth. You know, you've talked about how busy everybody is these days, and we just sometimes don't have the bandwidth to do anything other than to put our head down and get the work out the door. Yeah. Not recognizing, of course, that not saying anything is actually eroding our bandwidth.
Absolutely. You know? Yes.
For some of my clients, not all, one of the reasons they avoid saying anything and avoid addressing conflict is that they prioritize harmony over honesty. Yeah. You know, they're just so driven to preserve harmony almost at all costs.
Yeah.
So, and I guess the other thing I would say, and this is very similar to like not having the right words, but really not having a model or a framework that you can use on a regular basis to do this. It's like, you know, what is a repeatable, workable, productive process for addressing conflict? Yeah. They don't have one.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's be real here. This is totally understandable. It's such a human experience to avoid conflict. Yeah. But it isn't sustainable. So, Irvin, let's give our listeners a concrete way to quantify this.
Yeah, it's such a great question, you know, and I think there's part of this that is quantifiable in dollars, and then there's part that's not quantifiable. Yeah. But, you know, if you just, you know, take a really simple calculator of this and just, you know, how many hours a week, when you think about it, you know, just zoom back in the past couple of weeks and just think about situations where there is tension or conflict, and think about the times that you have done nothing because of confusion, mm-hmm. where you've had to rework situations because you're not addressing kind of a substandard work, or you've avoided that, or you've had to deal with delays, or someone has taken a sick day because they didn't want to address it or whatever. So if you calculate those hours, so let's just say it was 4 hours, and then how many people did that impact?
Yeah.
So just say you're in a team of five. So it's impacted five people because the team's impacted. Yeah. And then what's the average hourly wage? Just say in this team, it was $100 an hour is the average wage. Well, if you calculate that up, that amounts to $2,000 a week,
wow.
which is $104,000 a year. Ooh. So when you just think about it, that's how insidious this is. It just builds up. Now, what we can calculate are some of the things you can put a dollar on. You can put a dollar on the emotional mood, a dollar amount on burnout. All of these, you know, the culture, the deterioration of culture, the morale, all of these are very hard to quantify in dollars, but the impact is there. So avoidance is impacting both financially and also emotionally an organization, a team. And so there's a price tag.
Yeah.
And we're paying. Yes. And it's a big one. Let's move to some solutions of. And what we mean by solutions is not so much the solutions of how do we solve the conflict, but really how do we move away from, how can we move a few steps forward when we find ourselves in this avoidance space? And so I'm just curious, Bridget, what comes to mind in ways that we might break this cycle?
Yeah, well, this seems maybe obvious, but often we don't do it, which is to actually name the avoidance out loud. Like, what is the missing conversation here? And there's probably more than one. And when you identify it, you say it out loud, it kind of breaks the spell because now you kind of have to face the fact, wow, I really am avoiding some really critical conversations here, really critical conflicts. And then from there, now that you've named it, right, and you've brought it out of the shadows, you're in a position to maybe ask some curious questions, right? Like, what am I really afraid is going to happen here? You know, or what story am I telling myself about this? So I think that's the first step. And I would invite our listeners, like even in this moment right now, to survey your relationship systems at work and at home. And right now to yourself, see if you can name a couple of conversations you're avoiding, right? Speak it to yourself. I think from there, then it can be really helpful to clarify the impact, to make the invisible visible. Avoidance feels easy in the moment. It's the safe bet until you calculate the ripple effects. Like you've been doing, you've been sharing these both concrete monetary ripple effects and then the ones that, you know, are less about money, but more about trust and productivity. So I think a really great question to ask once you've named the conflict you're avoiding is, if nothing changes in 30 days, what will this cost me? What will this cost us in terms of team morale, more project delays, energy lost? Oh my God, the emotional energy alone.
Yes.
It's huge. All that stuff. You got to really speak it again to yourself. What are the costs here? And then I would say, lastly, would be getting really clear on your purpose for addressing the conflict, right? What is your one sentence purpose statement? Because when you're grounded in a clear purpose, it reduces anxiety.
Yeah.
So maybe you say, okay, I'm going to have this conversation, which I'm going to address a conflict. And my goal is to clarify expectations. That's my purpose in having this, right? Or maybe my purpose is to address this early before it escalates and snowballs into the huge thing. But bottom line is, once you know your purpose, you stay calmer and you're more intentional, right?
Yeah.
So those are the things that come to my mind.
I love that last one, because so often that's another trick that I have used in my past as a good conflict avoider is that I have taken solace in the fact, well, I'm not interviewing now because it's okay. They'll get over it. You know, there are times to do that. Sure. Absolutely. But where is it coming from? And that when I reflect back, a lot of time it was to avoid the conflict, not intervening early.
Right.
And then of course, what happened was it hit me in the face. Yeah,
for sure. Oh, you know what, Irvin, what's anything else? Because I think the three things that I shared are the ones that came to my mind. Is there a fourth one?
Well, you know, I just want to go back to something I said earlier, and maybe a way of doing that is, I don't know a leader who is not incredibly busy. Mm-hmm. I don't know a leader whose calendar is a mess and is jam-packed.
Yes.
And so it is so easy to let a day pass and you come in with this intention, I'm going to have the conversation, and it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So I would just say, put it on the calendar.
Absolutely.
Because I think if you make a commitment, I think the courage will be there if it's there. And so, you know, the right moment often doesn't come because we get sucked into the day. And so maybe schedule a conversation, even if it's only for 15 minutes to begin the conversation. And I think once it's once it's in our calendar, it loses a little bit of power. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've heard leaders who have moved into away from the avoidance that the hardest part wasn't actually the conversation. Very often they say, oh God, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. But really it's the deciding to have it. And once we have that, you know, we can break some of that inertia. Absolutely.
I just think that's so important. In fact, I just had a coaching conversation with a client where we talked about this conversation and you know, they're on board, right? And then I'm like, so when do you think, you know, you'll have that? Oh, you know, maybe a month or so from now, or like, you know, 6 weeks from now, because then we'll be past this, that, and the other thing. And I could tell it was not going to happen, right? And so I said, well, let me challenge you on putting it off that long, but also, when will you put it on your calendar? Because once it's on your calendar, you know, you it's a commitment to yourself.
Absolutely. You know? Yes.
So I think that's really key. Irvin, in all of your experience in helping leaders, both in your training and your coaching, because you've done extensive training and coaching around this topic, can you think of a good example of a leader who's learned to lean into conflict better?
You know, one that comes to mind, it was a great example. It was a senior VP that I was working with in a national nonprofit. Mm-hmm. And she had a common problem, actually, which it's funny because I was just talking to someone the other day who were bringing this exact scenario up again. And she had two directors who worked for her who were stars. They were great. Mm-hmm. However, you know, they were very skilled. They were brilliant in their own way, but their personalities did not gel well together. Mm. And their work styles did not gel well together. And what kept happening was frustrations and tension. And as this permeated down the system, we talked about the system's impact, you know, teams started taking sides.
Oh, yeah.
And you could see some collaboration was slowing. The meetings had this unexpressed tension and frustration. One of the things that she said to herself, I remember coaching, she said to herself, you know, well, what I said to myself is they're adults. These people are directors. They're not employees that are beginning their term. I mean, they've been working. They're highly professional people. They'll just work it out, mm-hmm. you know, which is reasonable
sure.
in one part. But, you know, months passed and they didn't work it out. And, you know, as we unpack that, you know, she'd come to me. This had been going on for a few months whenever we started her coaching. You know, and we unpack some of the cost. I think that's important yeah. as well. You know, it was like we talked about projects being stalled and, mm-hmm. and teams stopping sharing information and just her, and you called this out, the emotional drain that she felt in the midst of all
oh,
this.
Oh, yeah.
And I think, you know, there was this aha moment for her where she saw the silence, and what we tried is silence is not neutral.
Ooh.
And she said, I'm part of the problem. My silence is part of the problem. And I think, you know, her biggest fear was that if I bring this out in the open, it's going to get messy
mm-hmm.
and I am going to disrupt my two star players.
Oh, yeah.
And that's a real tension. And I think, you know, when she uncovered that, but she said, okay, let's schedule a meeting. And she did. And what was interesting was, you know, she came back and it was funny. I remember the coaching session. You could almost see that she had grown 4 inches. This weight that had been weighing her down had lifted. And I said, you know, what was it? She said, it was not a perfect meeting.
Right.
She said, there are issues. But what was clear in that meeting was that they were misinterpreting each other's behaviors. They each had created a narrative, and I had created a narrative that wasn't accurate. And both of them said that we're so glad that you stepped in.
Oh, interesting.
We're so glad you stepped in. And so not that this single conversation solved anything, far from it. There still was work, you know, there was misunderstandings and agreements, you know, that were reset, but it was a reset.
Yes.
And it took weeks, but she began to say that the energy shifted.
Mm.
And I remember she said something, she said, this took an hour to unpack. And why was I carrying it around for 6 months?
Wow.
That's, you know, huge. So, yeah. And so, you know, it is such a common experience. And of course, we come up with the justifications for it, et cetera. But, you know, avoidance so often can feel easier, but addressing it leads to a solution that's faster, healthier, and in the long run, a lot less painful.
Were you working with her long enough to know if these two individuals were able to make some progress?
Yeah, they really did. She said, now she was very honest. She said, you know, there's two egos in the room
yes.
here.
Yes.
So they're not going to be buddy-buddy. But she said, really, they began to work a lot better. Mm-hmm. And she said, what was interesting, she really felt that the impact, the contagion that was happening to the other people on the team stopped.
Oh, okay.
And there was a sigh of relief from them, and the team began to collaborate more. And she said that was the biggest impact.
It was like a safety valve that had been, you know, released or something, right? There was so much pressure, as you tell the story.
Yeah, oh, that's a great way of putting it. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a really great example. And when she came to the realization that her silence was part of the problem, I think that was a turning point, wasn't it?
It totally was. That, and I think, you know, she fell into what a lot of us fall into, and that is that my silence is, I'm taking a neutral position.
Yes.
And really, you know, silence is not neutrality.
Yes.
It is taking a position, and others are interpreting that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, Irvin, you know, this has been a great conversation. Like you, I am somebody who has a history of avoiding conflict. I've gotten a lot better over the years as I have practiced and practiced and practiced. But, you know, the conversation reminds us that avoidance of conflict is eminently human, but it's so costly. That's what I'm walking away with today is a sharper view of the costs of avoiding conflict. And when leaders do this, the conflict does not disappear. It just moves underground where it intensifies and becomes harder to address. But, you know, again, the good news is that when leaders step toward the conversation, even imperfectly, because you know it's going to be imperfectly, teams gain back some clarity, some trust, a little bit of momentum. And then that carries you forward to continue having, you know, the conversations that are so vital to our sense of not only like camaraderie and trust, but just vitality, like our inner vitality.
Absolutely. Yes.
So thank you, Irvin, for bringing this topic.
No, my pleasure. Yeah. And it's such a common experience that we've all gone through. And here we are to recovering conflict avoiders ourselves. So there is hope, dear folks. You know, if you find yourself like, oh, I don't know if I can move, believe me, there is. Hopefully you've learned some strategies of just moving that forward. And really, so often we create a vision of what the conversation will be like or what the conflict will do, and it's not near as bad as what we have made it out to be. So it is holiday season, and believe me or not, there will be plenty of moments of tension and plenty of moments of potential conflict for you to practice and become aware of that. Hopefully today you've had some inspiration and some ideas in moving beyond silence and actually tackling and coming out the other end better and improved. So thank you, everyone. Have a great holiday time, and we'll see you in the new year.
Take care, everyone.